in Portsmouth. This is NHPR.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In the face of medical emergency, most of us just want to be rushed to the nearest hospital. But if you had the time, choosing where to be treated could save you some big bucks, while not doing so could cost you. That's the message, anyway, from federal data released earlier this month by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The agency looked at how much hospitals nationwide charged Medicare for the most common procedures. The price tag differences among them were staggering, so big that officials said they can't be explained by geography alone. For example, in New Hampshire, the Medicare charge for treating heart failure and shock is $45,000 at Portsmouth Regional Hospital, while just an hour away, Elliott Hospital in Manchester charges significantly less, $18,000. That's according to some number crunching of the data by the Nashua Telegraph. Of course, hospitals have had a lot to say about this data, especially that consumers should view it with several caveats. Most important, they say, is that rates charged to Medicare are seldom what hospitals end up getting paid, which is usually far less. Still, many agree that these numbers add transparency to the debate about rising health costs and show just how far away we still are from reining them in. Today in The Exchange, we scan the latest data on hospital charges, and let's hear from you. What do you make of these differences, and what might explain them? Is it too simple to just look at these Medicare charges, or is this a useful tool? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests. Joining us from Hanover is Dr. Jim Weinstein, president and CEO of the Dartmouth-Hitchcock Health System and contributor to the Dartmouth Atlas Project for 20 years. And Dr. Weinstein, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you, Laura. Great to be here.
Also with us in studio, Mike Green, president and CEO of Concord Hospital. And Mike Green, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks,
as well.
Thanks, Laura. It's a pleasure.
And also with us, Ned Helms, director of the New Hampshire Institute for Health Policy and Practice at UNH. And Ned, a welcome back to you, too, and thanks for your time.
Always fun to be here, Laura.
Well, Ned, I'll turn to you first, but yeah. I want to hear from everybody. Your reaction, just real broadly, Ned, to these numbers from the federal government.
Well, I think for those of us that work in the field, there's no surprises here. We've had the folks up at Jim Weinstein's shop, the Dartmouth Institute, working on this stuff for decades, really, showing the large variation in Medicare reimbursement. This is the first time, however, that we've seen both charges and payments released, and it's not exactly consumer-friendly. It's 16,000 rows on an Excel file sheet, but the Nashua Telegraph has done a good job at breaking that down. And what it shows is there's great variation. And that occurs at a time when increasingly we're saying to patients, not just those on Medicare, but everyone, we want you to pay more attention. We want you to be conscious of your role that you play. And if they're to be conscious of that role, they have to have the tools and the information. Here in New Hampshire, we do have a tool through the New Hampshire Health Cost website that the Department of Insurance has built. We just recently got graded A as a state, one of the two in the country. But frankly, even though it's a good start, it only covers about 42 procedures. So there's a long way to go. But if we're going to ask businesses and consumers to be thoughtful purchasers, we've got to give them good information. And this is one of those pieces of information. But for those of us in the field, it's not a big surprise. But I think it really does open the eyes of people who have not been aware of these big variations.
Well, and the website you mentioned, the New Hampshire Health Cost Comparison, that's on our website, nhpr.org, and also on our Facebook page. But to pick up on what you said, Ned, sure, people in the field like you were not surprised. I think the public, though, was stunned.
Absolutely.
Stunned by these numbers. I mean, not just differences of 10%, 20%, but 3, 4, 5, 6 times more, sometimes within the same
city.
But
frankly, I think one of the things that's very interesting is that over the course of since 2010, since the passage of the Affordable Care Act, we've been talking about exchanges and we've been talking about Medicaid expansion. But there's so much activity going on to get at the root causes. Mike and his team, along with the folks from Elliott Hospital, are involved in a very important program with Medicare so that the reimbursement is not just based on DRG, but is also based on outcomes.
And DRG is what now?
A diagnostic-related group. That's what these were. These were the top 100 diagnostic-related groups. But we've got to get away from the fee-for-service business, which leads to these variations, and really focus on the outcomes. And we've got systems like Jim's, who's been a part of the Pioneer Project nationally for almost a decade now. Mike and his colleagues at Elliott, who are working with Medicare, some of our smallest community health centers in the North Country. But that doesn't get any attention. We're getting all this flashy stuff. So it's always surprising when something that has been talked about, these cost variations, and written about for years, all of a sudden it comes out and it's like it came out for the very first time.
Well, and Mike Green to you, and also Dr. Weinstein. Mike, to you first, please. So the public sees these. As I said, they're stunned. They can't believe the differences. Why do these charges vary so wildly among hospitals?
Well, first of all, I would point out that I think the public should be looking at what Medicare pays us, not what the charges are. And there's much less variability in terms of what hospitals get paid from Medicare. The reason that the charges are so different is it's anachronistic, and it's just very hard to get away from because it goes back probably 50 years for many organizations in terms of how they started charging and how they marked up those charges year after year. And I think it also goes to the reality of you have to get your money someplace. So what happens, I would say the analogy is like two different restaurants across the street. One restaurant marks up their food prices more, and the other restaurant marks up their wine more. So you have different charges based upon where an organization historically thought they could get their money. So if a hospital were concentrating on cardiac services, they might charge more for cardiac services because that's how they made their bottom line. Now, if you roll forward to where we are today, the charges are far less meaningful because they're only meaningful to probably 3 or 4% because there are only 3 or 4% that probably pay on the basis of charges. Everybody else has a contract from an insurance company. And it's so hard to get away from because 3 or 4% is still a lot of money. If you have 4% of $400 million, that's $16 million. And if you say, well, you know, I really want to reduce my charges by 25%, then that's going to cost you $4 million from that subset. So it's really hard to rectify the imbalance. If you look at California, the charges are much higher than they are in New Hampshire, 500%. And it's really because as Medi-Cal, which is their Medicaid system, grew, the hospitals had to get money off a smaller and smaller base that was paying on the basis of charges. So they just increased their charges.
For everybody else that wasn't on Medicare. Medicaid, excuse me.
Well, which is a very small group that was actually paying off charges, but they had to charge them a lot to offset what they were losing on Medicaid. It's an anachronistic system, and I'm sure Jim Weinstein will tell you very clearly it needs to change.
Well, and we'll definitely untangle it, and lots of follow-ups for you too, Mike Green. But I want to get you into this too, Dr. Weinstein. I mean, if you were talking to somebody at a party there in Hanover and they said, look, Dr. Weinstein, it's crazy, you know, 2, 3, 4 times price differential, or at least charge differential, what's behind that? What would you say?
Well, first I'd say it's about time we had some transparency. Every system's designed to get the results it gets, and we've designed a system that doesn't work. These numbers, in some ways, are almost meaningless. On the other hand, they allow people for the first time to see an inside look at the real problem. You know that quote by Walt Kelly from the cartoon Pogo, "We've met the enemy, and the enemy is us"? We've got a lot of work to do here. Our system is broken. You know, the charges in Boston in this report are 3 times the charges in any New Hampshire hospital. I'm not sure that what they actually get paid. I think, as Mike said, the commercial payers really work at a disadvantage because of this, because we have such a cost shift going on away from Medicare to the commercial payers. The uninsured or the underinsured are the ones who actually have the problem. The way I explain this to my colleagues would be like a grocery store, and a little bit different take on Mike's analogy. But, you know, when you come into the hospital, there's certain things you buy during an admission for a heart problem or a hip problem or a back problem. And depending on what you put in that grocery bag, you get you go through the line and you get a charge number. Utilization from the Dartmouth Atlas has been the major problem. We tend to overutilize resources in certain areas of the country consistently. Dr. Winberg, myself, and others have seen this for decades now. if you live in certain parts of the country, it's always going to be 3 to 5 times more expensive because they tend to utilize more things. They buy more things in the grocery store. And when they go through the checkout line, it's a lot more expensive. And as Mike said and Ned said, the outcomes in many cases, in fact, are worse.
Well, and the federal officials said, yeah, more money doesn't necessarily mean better care. Go ahead, Dr. Weinstein.
No, that's just it. You're right, Laura. More is not better. In fact, we always say that less is more. And I think geography, unfortunately, is destiny. Geography is destiny. It is not the way this country is going to get better. We need to have transparency, and we need to know the outcomes. Some of the pricing, however, is, as my colleagues alluded to, is because there are different things happening at an academic medical center like Dartmouth. The charges are different for the education programs. This does not include the physician fees in this data. It just includes the hospital fees. So there is some tremendous differences. I hope what this will do is create questions and create more accountability for the system.
Well, and a quick question for you, Dr. Weinstein, and with all due respect, you've obviously been looking at this a lot longer than I have, but the shop-around concept, overutilization of health resources, you know, as you said, we put too much in that healthcare basket. But when you have cancer or chest pains or something really scary, you don't know any better. You just want to get better. You just want to feel right. You just, you know, you want to live. I mean, I don't know if that's such a great analogy, the shop around. It's different with healthcare.
Well, on a personal note, Laura, my daughter died from cancer at 12 years of age.
Wow.
After 12 years of treatment and going through the shopping cart, I would say there's a lot of things that are questionable. I treat cancer patients. My specialty is spine surgery, and I've actually studied and written the approaches to treating spine cancer. I'm well aware of the cost and the market basket for healthcare and cancer, and I empathize with every one of those patients more than you would like, but potentially. But I understand.
Yeah. All right. Well, and that's. I'm very sorry to hear about that, and that definitely shows that you've got a deep connection to this. We will talk after a short break, and we'll take your calls, too, as we dig into this issue of healthcare charges, 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. Cloudy today. Showers and thunderstorms, especially across south central and southern New Hampshire. Could see some breaks of sunshine this afternoon. Highs from 75 from the White Mountains north, ranging to 85 degrees toward the Merrimack Valley. NHPR Daily Weather Report, made possible with support from Public Service of New Hampshire. And support for NHPR comes from UR members and Capital Center for the Arts in Concord, hosting its 2013-2014 season preview open house barbecue Wednesday, May 22nd at 6 p.m. All are welcome. Details at ccanh.com. From Granite State Credit Union, providers of local residential and commercial mortgage and equity products with locations statewide, equal housing lender, gscu.org. And the Dairy Field School, offering summer programs in the arts, academics, and athletics for students in grades 1 through 12, online at dairyfield.org/summer. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, hospital charges get an X-ray. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid recently released data on how much hospitals charge Medicare for common procedures. It showed giant disparities for the same procedures, often within the same city. We're looking at why these variations exist, their impact on medical care for everyone. Let's hear from you, your reaction and questions about this data. 1-800-892-6477. By the way, if you want to look at it in more detail, go to our website, NHPR.org, where we have the federal data there. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Mike Green is in studio, president and CEO of Concord Hospital, along with Ned Helms, director of the New Hampshire Institute for Health Policy and Practice at UNH. And Dr. Jim Weinstein joins us from Hanover, president and CEO of the Dartmouth-Hitchcock System and contributor to the Dartmouth Atlas Project for 20 years. And gentlemen, I do want to get our listeners involved, but a couple more quick questions. And back to you, Dr. Weinstein, please. You said just before the break, you said that these numbers are great in terms of transparency and helping us have a more intelligent conversation about healthcare costs. But you also said these numbers are almost meaningless. Now, what do you mean there?
Well, because, as Mike said, the reimbursement rates are very different. This only affects really the uninsured and underinsured. In fact, they're the ones that have to actually figure out how to pay these prices. People with Medicare, we get paid by Medicare what they pay. And on the commercial side, then the contracts are negotiated. So this really only affects the uninsured and underinsured.
I see. So, Mike Green, even though these numbers look at what hospitals charge Medicare, they kind of set the rates for everybody? Oh, is that?
Yeah, they pretty much set the rates for everybody. I guess the point I would make is that they are relevant to a small percentage. For example, in New Hampshire, mm-hmm. workers' comp pays charges. I don't understand why, but workers' comp pays charges.
Charges means what you charge, the price tag.
What we charge, which would be relevant in the context of the information that was released by Medicare. But I'd make two other points. One is that the uninsured, they do not pay charges. At least we don't expect them to. They automatically qualify for a 25% discount, and then they qualify for another 10% discount if they can pay us in a prompt way. So that's a 35% discount. So they don't pay 100% of charges. The other thing that I would point out that makes these numbers somewhat irrelevant, and it does have to do with the Dartmouth Atlas, which measures utilization. You could conceivably go to a hospital that charges more for something, let's say congestive heart failure. But if they can treat you once and get it right, you may be willing to pay more. If you go somewhere that charges less, but they readmit you three times, you end up paying more on the basis of utilization, which is the whole point of the Dartmouth Atlas. So
sure.
that means this information, in the absence of quality data and utilization data, really isn't terribly meaningful.
Although federal officials, when they release this data, I know you know this, Mike, they said, look, quality is not connected to money. Just because you go to a place that's cheaper doesn't mean it's worse.
Correct.
So, Ned, go ahead.
Well, Mike's put his finger on it. I think it's good, as Jim said, that people are alarmed at this great variation in charge because it causes them to bring attention. But there's two other areas, and Mike just alluded to it. There's charges. But we also know, as Jim just said, that there's great difference in terms of utilization for the exact same diagnosis, a great difference in utilization. And then outcomes, there's great difference. What we've got to do as a system is to focus on all of those. And you need a jarring report like this to say something's amiss. You know, these charges are built on anachronistic old things. But there is a whole effort that's taking place right now within the field itself to really focus on outcomes, to try and explain why there's this mad variation that the Dartmouth Atlas has been talking about for decades, that your geography is really far more important than your biology on whether or not you're going to have back surgery. And we've got to get at that. And the system that we've had in the past has not done that. But the system that we are moving to, paying for outcomes, will do that in a better way. But we need reports like this so that the national debate says, folks, we've got to really understand that there are some haywire things that we're trying to fix.
Haywire is a good word for it. I think that's how a lot of people felt when this data was released. Ned, and I know you want to jump in, Dr. Weinstein, but Ned, what do you think? Some of these hospitals in this federal data were kind of singled out as the most expensive, and everybody said, gee, isn't that crazy? Do they face public pressure now to lower those charges, or do they just say, well, this is the way it is?
I think we have to separate the signal away from the noise. We really do. I think that the way we have to take this report is let's not dig into the details of this report so we can all become well-versed in charge masters. Let's just understand that there is huge variation. Why is that and how can we narrow the variation? Why is there such huge variation in utilization for back surgery in one place as opposed to another? We've got to keep our eye on the donut and not in the hole. And I'm afraid that sometimes when these things come along, they're big headlines, they're a buzz for a minute, but we forget that the long work of changing the system. I used to say in the Army, you can parachute into a situation, you can't parachute out.
Yeah.
We've got to slog our way out of this by the hard work that will be going on for systems who will become accountable for the care that they deliver.
Okay. And Dr. Weinstein, I know you wanted to jump in there. Go ahead.
No, I just want to get back to the patient. I think the issue here is charges are important. Obviously, I think the work that we've done with the Dartmouth Atlas, as you said, for decades, points to the real issue in utilization and the variation thereof, where geography tends to be destiny. But the patient really needs to get involved in the decisions about their care. We started the first in the nation shared decision-making center when I first came to Dartmouth to give patients information about the choices around their breast cancer. That's been in the news a lot now because of Anjali Jolie. You know, who's in charge of deciding about whether I should have a treatment for my breast cancer or not? And how is that decision made? Which then gets into the utilization of resources. And we believe that shared decision-making, informed choice, involving patients, and then, as Ned said, collecting the outcomes. Without the outcomes, we have no information about what the value of these dollars spent actually means. Are we hurting people by spending more? Are we saving people by spending more? Until we get patients involved in the choice and actually collect outcomes, the story's incomplete.
I want to invite our listeners to join us, and then so many more questions and comments. Our phone number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And let's go to Moultonboro first. Julia's waiting. Hi, Julia. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a comment. I want to repeat what one of your guests had said. It's about time for transparency here. It's frustrating for someone like myself and my husband, two college graduates with kids, who have been self-employed for 20 years. And after leaving short jobs where they paid our health insurance, which was great back in the 80s, we found, you know, we were shelling out $500, now $800 a month. And that's not a bad, you know, our deductibles are high, but what does frustrate me as a payer, as a patient, now and as a mother, is that the more money I spend certainly doesn't mean I get better care at all. And it also, I'd like to have someone out there be an advocate for someone like myself who does go through every bill. And I will call that hospital and I encourage patients to do this and say, you know, you just charged me $1,200 for my 11-year-old to walk through an ER here in New Hampshire Hospital, and this is ludicrous. You know, what's your definition of a splint? And when you go through it and talk to someone in the hospital, they you know, they'll lower your bill by $500 because you actually read through every single one of those charges and say, no, she didn't have a wooden splint when she came home. No, she didn't have, you know, it's almost like you have to be your own watchdog.
Yeah, so it sounds messy and capricious,
it does.
Julia.
And there was 93 pieces of paperwork.
Wow.
For one 11-year-old's broken arm. And that's just coming from my monthly, you know, person, my Anthem. And the other thing that's very frustrating is when you do go to a hospital and say, I have cash, what are you going to charge me? Well, they'll charge you the same amount that they'll bill Medicaid. And that happened where I moved from out west, and I had a baby, and they were not going to pay for the anesthesiologist. And I said, well, you're billing me the same amount. I'm paying cash for this service. I'm paying cash to deliver a baby. And believe me, I called around. And you can't get a price. It's an odd industry. They say, sign here and agree to pay whatever we charge you at the end. And I said, well, what are you going to charge me? Forget that. So, but the long story is that they were going to charge me what they charge Medicaid until you push.
Medicare,
you
Julie.
No,
yeah.
Medicare.
Yeah. And thank you for calling in. And boy, lots of experiences. And Mike Green, he's right. When you start digging into the hospital bills, your eyes kind of fly open.
Well, I would agree with you. It's messy, but I would disagree. It's not capricious. It's very challenging when you're treating hundreds of thousands of patients, and you're billing for potentially hundreds of items. It is possible that mistakes get made, and we are always willing to work with a patient to go over an itemized bill with them. I think that we're getting much better, not just at Concord Hospital, but in the field in general, at negotiating with people if they want to pay cash up front. But it is very difficult because sometimes you don't know until you have a personal patient experience as to what they're actually going to consume during a hospitalization. But I think patients should be advocates for themselves. I think patients do need help. I guess one of the other things I would point out that makes it messy is that unlike the financial industry, we have not come up to speed in terms of information technology. And most of us are waiting for what I would call the next generation that will allow us, from a standpoint of financial services, patient financial services, to have much better itemized bills for patients at time of service, so that things are much more understandable than they are today. Many of us are just unfortunately stuck to somewhat legacy systems that it's going to cost millions of dollars to replace.
You know, oh, go ahead, Ned. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, Mike's absolutely right. I mean, what we have is 20% of the gross domestic product that basically is built up on piecework. And that's just historically the way it's
come. What do
you mean
by that, Ned, piecework?
You do a procedure, you get paid. That's how it's paid. It's fee for service. Do something, get paid. Well, what are the incentives in something like that? Either do more things or charge more for the things that you do. But I think that systems, as Mike and Jim are a part of right now, are trying to reform that. They're trying to focus their system on creating consistent, excellent outcomes around the triple aim. They're trying to create a healthy population, assure that best practices are given at every time, and that they're constantly seeking value in terms of the cost. And that's not the way this system has historically evolved, but the way it's changing now. And the reason it's changing is it became unsustainable. We cannot, as a nation, pay twice as much as every other industrialized nation for its health care and leave 20% of the people uncovered. And it's because of the variation. Let me just cite one example. The folks up at the Dartmouth Atlas did a study and said that if all of the healthcare systems in this country performed as efficiently in terms of outcome and cost as the most efficient systems in this country, like Grand Junction, Colorado, that we would in 2020 not have a $700 billion deficit in the Medicare Trust Fund, but a $500 billion surplus. So we know how to do it right, and there are systems that are trying to get it right, but it's going to take us time, and it's going to take dedicated leadership not to preserve the past, but to create the new future based on utilization and outcomes.
Yeah, although we talked about this before with Dr. Weinstein, and he told us that heartbreaking story about his daughter, Ned, and I guess I would ask you too, you know, again, when you're sick, you know, costs be damned. I mean, you just want to
right.
find that
well,
cure,
things,
and you're not feeling good, and you're scared, and you're confused.
One of the things that these folks are deeply engaged in is a concept that really grew up in pediatrics called the patient-centered medical home. And essentially what it does is it brings back medicine the way we used to remember it, maybe the way your dad delivered it, Mike. You know, the practitioner who would actually be taking care, they would be the focus of the care. So you're not running around in a system afraid with a disease and just scared and thinking perhaps that the more I get, the better it'll be. You've got a partner working with you who is your advocate to work through the system in a patient-centered medical home. And that is the very heart of an accountable care organization. So, you know, we talk about the money, the headlines come in, but as Jim said a little bit ago, this is all about people and getting them into a system that makes sense.
Let's go back to our callers. Mike's waiting in Wolfboro. Hi, Mike, you're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having me. I am a physician up in Wolfboro, and what your speakers haven't said explicitly that I think most people don't know and needs to be said because it's completely non-intuitive, is that when a hospital negotiates these rates with their insurance companies to say, how much will you pay me to do this particular operation, or how much will you pay me to give this splint to a patient, by law, they cannot know what anybody else is charging for that same procedure or that same device. So you sort of have to negotiate with the insurance company in a black box, and there's an intermediate person who has a general sense of what other hospitals are charging, and they'll tell the hospital, yes, that seems like a reasonable amount to charge for that particular procedure or device. So that's why some of these disparities have come about.
Mike, what do you think is else, as a doctor, what do you think is the doctor's role in these disparities, if anything? Do you guys play a part in, you know, encouraging what our guests have called overutilization, too many procedures, too many tests, and so forth?
A lot of times it feels like it's completely out of our hands, actually.
Really? Yeah.
Certainly, we were talking about this just last night, malpractice certainly drives a lot of it. If you're an emergency room doctor and someone comes in with a headache and you happen to not do that CAT scan for the 1 in 1,000 chance that they're going to have something dangerous in their brain, then you can be sued.
Yeah.
And on the whole, when you look at a systems and a probability model, you know that the likelihood of something being there is pretty low, and maybe in some other countries they wouldn't do the CAT scan. But here in the United States, because you're at risk for being sued, you're probably more likely to do that procedure.
Yeah, although all doctors face that, right, Mike? So as we look at overall costs, you're right, that may inflate the cost. But when we look at disparities between different hospitals and the huge differences among those price tags, I don't know if malpractice insurance would explain it. I wonder what you think. Because everybody has to pay that.
Yeah, well, one thing that rural hospitals that we deal with here, in a lot of the New Hampshire hospitals in particular, is if you live in a very small area and, for example, you only have enough patients for two surgeons, to have just two surgeons on your staff it's untenable. Those physicians would have to be on call every other night.
I see.
For their quality of life, that's horrible. And for the safety of the patients, that's not reasonable. And so there gets to be a point where your staff can only be so small. So you have to be able to pay those people who are going to be on call on a rotating basis. And to do that, you do have to charge more for certain things than someone who's in a very population-heavy area.
Okay. Well, Mike, it's good to hear from you, especially since you are obviously involved in this. A couple comments from him. What do you think, Dr. Weinstein?
Well, I think what Mike points out is kind of the problems. Mike sees it in his community, which he should. It goes back to the patients that he's trying to care for in a community in which he lives in. And the complexities of this, without clarity about charges and prices and transparency of these things, makes it very difficult for the consumer to understand what they actually are paying. And in many cases, until they get their bill, as the last caller said, they have no idea what the charges are. And I think, you know, to Mike's point about ordering a CAT scan or something for liability issues, I think that's interesting. But, you know, we want to do evidence-based practice. We need to help each other. But I sympathize with him in a rural community trying to take care of everything. You know, the academic medical center allows us to try to work together. But the physicians don't know their charges most of the time. And you could ask a physician what it costs, and most of the time they actually don't know.
All right. Well, and I want to pick up on Mike's other point about geography, because we keep touching on it, but I want to hit that on the head as well. Mike, thank you for calling in. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from World Affairs Council presenting its Global Forum on the Middle East featuring Ambassador Ryan Crocker on June 3rd at 5 p.m. at Southern New Hampshire University. Details at wacnh.org. And Alliance Audiology, Eliza Evans, Ike Valdez, Nicole Betancourt, and Libby Young, hearing professionals recognizing May as Better Hearing and Speech Month. Alliance Audiology, LLC.com. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
NHPR's drawing to see Paul McCartney is over almost as soon as it began. There are just a few days left to get your name in the hat to win two tickets and experience the former Beatle live at the heart of Red Sox Nation, plus an overnight stay at the Hotel Commonwealth. Enter by Thursday at 1-800-639-4131 or nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, results of the House vote today on expanded gambling, the big vote in the House on the Senate casino bill. We are right now live streaming the House proceedings, and as the proceedings get going, we'll also be live blogging. So go to nhpr.org if you want the very latest on this big gambling vote in the House today. This hour on The Exchange, we're looking at why different hospitals, even within the same city, have been charging Medicare hugely different amounts for the same procedure. We're looking at reaction here in New Hampshire to this federal data released earlier this month showing wide varieties for hospital charges to Medicare, often for the same procedure within the same city. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And gentlemen, so many people who want to jump in either by email, Facebook calls, but I did want to cover something else with you that we keep touching on but not diving into. So let's dive into it. And Mike Green, to you first. The idea of geography. Jim Weinstein has said, again, through his work with the Atlas Project, that he's learned, as he put it, geography is destiny, because he sees such better health outcomes for lower cost in some areas of the country versus others. And yet, when the federal government released this data, they said the disparities can't be explained by geography alone. And then our caller, Mike, who just called, said that rural areas sometimes have to spend more money per patient than urban areas just because of efficiencies. What do you think? What's the role of geography in explaining these disparities?
Well, I think geography does play a substantial role, but you can't – it's interesting because if you look at it on a macro basis, I think geography explains why California has the highest charges in the country for many of these procedures. But if you look at it on a more micro basis, geography doesn't explain why one hospital in Manchester would charge dramatically different for the same procedure than another hospital. And I think, again, it goes back to the history. If you think about it, Laura, these are the ills of the so-called charge master. If hospitals started putting in financial systems, let's say in the 1950s, and one hospital charged $200 for something, and another hospital charged $210 for something, for the same thing, you wouldn't think about that as a big difference. But if you inflate that by 5% every year for the next 70 years, those differences become hugely dramatic. And that's why I say it's anachronistic. Small differences 70 years ago have become huge differences today, and you sort of get stuck to it like a tar baby. How are you gonna unwind yourself from it? It takes a lot of time. We're going through our charge master at Concord Hospital and very carefully trying to realign things in a much more realistic way. But when you've got thousands of items, it's going to take years to do it in a rational way.
So, and I hate to put it this way, Mike, but how do hospitals get away with that? How do you get away with charging 5%, 5%, 5%, 5% every year? Well, the guy down the street isn't doing that. People don't have the sticker
it's 5% or 7% or 3%. And it's what you have to increase your charges because the federal government isn't increasing what they're paying you. Medicaid isn't increasing what they're paying you. But at the same time, your labor costs are going up. Your cost of technology is going up. So you have to increase by more than what inflation is because you're not getting the return from Medicare and Medicaid.
I see. So you're not, and this gets back to what you said earlier, just because you're charging Medicare X amount doesn't mean you get X amount.
Absolutely.
In fact, you get nowhere close to X amount. Go ahead, Ned.
And actually, Jim ought to be the one to weigh in on this, but as you think back of that 50 years ago, think of the technology. How many CT scanners did we have and MRIs and PET scanners and, you know, the capacity to do really complex things? And as Jim and his colleagues at the Dartmouth Institute have discovered in many places in the country, the reason we do those things is because we have those instruments, not because it's required. We do more CTs where there are more CT scanners. We do more back surgery where there are more back surgeons.
That's the utilization.
The utilization.
And that explains some of the differences.
Yeah, exactly. So you compound what Mike has said, which is a mathematical explanation, you know, from a crazy charge master. God, I'm
what is
so
the charge master that keeps coming up?
I have absolutely no idea, thank God.
It's the book of charges.
Yeah.
Everything you sell, every procedure you have.
And is this the first time, Mike, that the charge master has been made public?
Well, I think it's because of transparency, there's more attentiveness to what is this weird thing called the charge master today.
Yeah. Jim, Dr. Weinstein, go ahead and jump in and then we'll go back to our listeners.
Yeah. First, the geography is destiny really depends on the condition you're talking about. You know, if you're talking about spine surgery, there are areas of the country that just tend to do more. And if you live in that area of the country, that's likely what you'll get. If it's end-of-life issues, certain parts of the country are higher. It's not all California. The other issue I think that's really important here, Laura, as my colleagues are alluding to, is we don't really have what it cost us to deliver the care. There's very little cost accounting in healthcare, and if we actually knew what it cost, we might get to some more realistic charging. And I think the Brill article in Time magazine a few weeks back, you know, just was another example. When you pay, you know, hundreds of dollars for a bag of IV fluid that might actually cost, you know, $7, then, you know, we as hospital systems are stuck paying those kinds of prices. So the supply-induced demand issues, whether it's hospital beds, whether it's technology that Ned was alluding to, or the cost of drugs and devices that we have to, you know, offer to our patients, this is a very complicated interaction of multiple variables that actually lead to these higher costs and then these, you know, charges that are different depending on who the payer is.
Well, and I understand, Dr. Weinstein, you know, again, some of the drivers that are inflating healthcare costs. You know, you're underpaid for Medicare and Medicaid, like Mike Green said. People come in and they're uninsured. People demand the latest technology. Drug companies, you know, maybe charge too much for their prescriptions. What I still don't get, Dr. Weinstein, is the disparities between these cities. And again, it's not just 5, 10, 15%. It's huge disparities. So I understand what's driving costs up overall. What I still don't get is why it's so different from place to place.
Yeah, I still think if you go back to the grocery store analogy, which you may not like, but if you think about a back surgery patient who comes into Concord Hospital or the Seacoast or Lebanon, New Hampshire, there's certain things that are done during that hospitalization that all get charged. They're pieces put into the grocery basket. And so you might get an MRI scan, you might get an EKG, you might get a chest x-ray, you might have a special IV, you might have a x-ray in the operating room, you might get a device used to do your spine fusion, you might, you know, have a bone graft used, you might use a specially new material that's available. All of those things go on to the grocery list and come out with a set of charges. Those are very different from hospital to hospital, what you do. One of the things I'm working on with is called the High Value Health Collaborative. It's a national effort with over 20 organizations, 70,000 physicians, 70 million patients, great hospitals, Mayo Clinic, Intermountain, UCLA, you know, Scott and White, all over the country, all looking at what do we really need to do during a hospitalization for a patient who's going to undergo spine surgery? What is the five or six critical things? Not this grocery store shopping basket worth of things that all the hospitals do differently.
I see. So that long list of procedures, Dr. Weinstein, you know, might be viewed as protocol at some hospitals, whereas other hospitals may say, no, we really don't need to do all that. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly right.
Let's go back to our listeners. And Dave is waiting in Nashua. Hi, Dave. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. So I love great medicine. I am a cancer survivor, almost died 6 years ago from stage 4 kidney cancer. And when I emerged from it, I got involved in what's called the e-patient movement, empowered, engaged, equipped, enabled, really activated patients who think for themselves. And one thing I've discovered, I've been giving speeches now around the world about patients being involved in medicine. It's virtually impossible to find out what anything's going to cost in advance. This is not a functioning marketplace.
So even if you wanted to shop around, Dave, you had a hard time. You couldn't find the costs.
Well, exactly, yes. And it's, you know, a famous health economist named Reinhardt published a paper that I'm sure your guests are well aware of called Hospital Pricing in America, Chaos Behind a Veil of Secrecy. And that's exactly what I found out in my personal experience. I went on high deductible a year and a half ago, because in New Hampshire there are no commercial insurance plans for former cancer patients. And it was so bad, even when I tried to find the price of a CT or a simple shingles vaccine, that when I got a skin cancer diagnosis, I published an RFP, a request for proposals.
Wow. Well, Dave, congratulations, first of all, on making it through cancer. And Mike Green, you touched on this earlier, the idea that even if you want to shop around, it's hard to do that.
Well, it's getting easier. I think it's certainly easier for elective procedures like plastic surgery today because patients are paying and they want to know what they're going to pay. I think it's even easier for things like CAT scans and MRIs. I think where it gets more difficult is for procedures where no two procedures are going to be exactly alike. Now, Jim Weinstein talked about spine surgery, and I think that there are developing protocols for spine surgery where it should be easier to be able to identify what those costs are going to be ahead of time. But even for joint replacements, which are very similar, you don't necessarily know what joint the surgeon is going to use, what prosthetic device. And the difference in prosthetic device can change the cost of a case by thousands of dollars. Oftentimes with an imaging exam, you don't know whether it's going to be with contrast medium or not. So it's hard to say to the patient, your charge is going to be X unless you're absolutely sure that the procedure is going to align with X. But we do have to get better. And I think over the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to be far better in terms of transparency and being able to tell patients ahead of time what it's going to cost. And they'll have some indication as to what the outcome is going to be or what they should expect for an outcome as well.
Well, and Laura, even though hospitals were upset about the release of this data, some of them, because it didn't make them look good, everybody said it increases transparency.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and go ahead, Dr. Weinstein, and then Ned, and then I have an email for you. Yeah.
I just want to pick up on Mike's point about the joint replacement or the spine surgery. Hospital systems can control those costs by working with the device companies and only offering a certain number of devices into the system and knowing what those costs are. We've taken $2 million out of our spine device costs at Dartmouth-Hitchcock just by going with one device company and making a contract. So that is more controllable. Doctors don't like it because they like to have the options of what they want to use in different patients, but you can control that.
Go ahead, Ned.
Just to pick up on Mike said, we are moving in the right direction here in New Hampshire. We do have the health cost website. It's got 42 of the most frequent procedures, whether it's preventive emergency surgery. But I know the Department of Insurance and people in the legislature are saying, how can we take that first step and move it further? How can we include more procedures? How can we become more sophisticated? How can we get that information out in the most effective way? And it's got to be actionable information. It's got to be good information that we have confidence and trust in.
Well, and I want to apologize, first of all, to everybody who's waiting on the phone. I got a stack of emails here. I think these numbers really touched a nerve, so we won't get to everybody today, but I want to thank everybody for contributing. Here's an email that just came in. This person didn't want their name used. My head is spinning. Can your guests not hear the question? To use the woefully oversimplified example of the shopping cart, the topic isn't utilization, it's cost. In other words, it isn't how many cans of peas the shopper puts in the cart, but the cost of each can. The U.S. health system is the most over-administered in the world. DHMC, Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, has assistance to the directors of who knows what. How does Dr. Weinstein plan to address the costs, stop the Dartmouth Atlas, the shared decision-making distractions, and answer the question, tell us how you'll charge less, lower the number of Mercedes in the administrators' and doctors' parking lots. And I want to thank that person for the email. And again, thank everybody who emailed. Dr. Weinstein, to you first. I mean, on your end, what can you do to lower costs? This emailer says, start with the administrator to the administrator to the administrator.
Yeah, I think all of those questions are exactly right and feel very good that the person asked that question. We've started what we call the Value Institute to actually look at our cost on everything. And I think this person's exactly right. How many FTEs, how many people do you need to deliver a service? It's very threatening to a healthcare system to actually change the workforce, which is the major expense in any system. 60% to 70% of any system is people. Those are jobs for real people that live in our communities. But I think the person's exactly right, and it's a fair question. And we need to address those issues, and we are addressing those issues, as I'm sure all of our colleagues are. And I think that the only way to get healthcare costs down for a can of peas, as they suggest, is to negotiate, you know, whether it's devices, drugs, insurance, cost of a hospital bed, et cetera, is get our actual cost of delivering that can of peas down so that we can actually charge less. And that's exactly the work we need to do across this country.
What about transparency, too, Mike Green? You know, you can't decide what to do with the can of peas if you don't know how much the peas cost. I'd like your thoughts on that and also what you are doing at Concord Hospital to get costs down.
Well, first of all, let me address the cost issue. We've really embraced lean, and lean is based upon the Toyota production model as to how they've done extremely well at reducing the cost and increasing the quality in the production of cars. Now, I would argue that healthcare is one heck of a lot more complicated than cars. but the same principles apply in terms of eliminating waste, looking at processes, and if you've got 7 steps, maybe you only need 4 steps and you get rid of 3 steps. So we're working very hard at that. We're also working very hard at the things Dr. Weinstein talked about, in terms of trying to make sure that we are standardizing on what we use for products and trying to get as cost effective as we can with those products. So you do try to control the cost of the can of peas. I don't think any of us are going to end up in the aggregate lowering our charges. I think it's going to be a matter of how do we make sure we're not increasing charges any more than they absolutely have to be increased to cover what is legitimate in terms of the cost of labor, because it really is all about labor. And yes, we ought to be trying to find everything we can do to eliminate administrative costs that are unnecessary. At the same time, I would point out the federal government is driving our cost of administration. Our costs for compliance have gone up by a multiple of probably 10 over the last 5 years.
Really?
And we have more people working in compliance today on just looking at administrative burdens placed on us by the federal government. So we're sort of caught in this weird world. Everybody wants us to lower our cost, but just like banking and other industries, the federal government is driving up our cost because of the bureaucracy they impose on us.
Well, and you talked about the 7 procedures. It's hard to know which 3 to get rid of if you're going to get down to that list to 4. That's the scary part, right?
Well, it's really not scary, because you get people in the room and you decide, well, how many people have to touch this piece of paper? And if only 3 people need to touch the piece of paper, but 7 people are touching it today, you get rid of those other 4. You don't necessarily get rid of those 4 people, but you have them do something that's going to be constructive rather than duplicate touching of a piece of paper.
Well, gentlemen, so many people want to jump in on this conversation. I want to thank everybody who contributed, and I want to thank the 3 of you very much for being here. Thanks a lot for giving us your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
That's Mike Green, President and CEO of Concord Hospital, Ned Helms, Director of the New Hampshire Institute for Health Policy and Practice at UNH, and Dr. Jim Weinstein, President and CEO of Dartmouth-Hitchcock Health System. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy.